All right. Well, about the time I was getting to HCC, I had been really firmly entrenched in the idea of either doing something with forensic science or with epidemiology, virology, and I hadn't really decided between those two. I bounced back and forth all the time and thought they were both very fascinating, and then just got to the point where I really, really, really felt bad about leaving mathematics. I was taking mathematics courses for fun, and I couldn't really see leaving it, so I just decided to change my major.
Zach Forrest is a math major. He doesn't want to be a teacher, but would rather work as a math consultant. In case you were wondering if he likes it, well, here you go.
I absolutely love it. It's the thing that I can get up and do any day of the week, and I can love every single day. A lot of things, I'll bounce back and forth. I'll like it one day, and the next day it'll bore me. Mathematics does not bore me. I've been working a lot recently with stuff in topology, and that's led me to be interested in things surrounding continuity of functions and of transformations, and also to be interested in things like openness, closedness, anything to do with sets in topological spaces and metric spaces.
So can you explain topology real fast?
Topology is essentially the study of structures and how we can take two different spaces and structures and decide whether or not they are equivalent to one another. All right, I want to do really complex problems, to work with complex problems and theories in real life, perhaps, and then sometimes in the abstract realm. I mean, there are a lot of things that use a mathematics in application. For instance, the military only recently put out a document talking about how they'd use mathematicians to work with the structure of terrorist cells in abstract mathematics and locate other terrorist cell members because of the structures they'd made in math.
So kind of based on what we know about terrorist cells already, we use principles that we use in math to find similar people that would maybe be part of that?
Yes, things like that, and things about the way that their group, that would be another one of those topology things. You build a group, you make the structure of the cell inside the group, and then you find that in other places. You look for other organizations that seem to mimic that and begin looking at that. A lot of what I'm interested in doing is working with any of the more advanced technologies, things that would be at the government level. So I would be interested in working on things pertaining to maybe security systems, maybe things with complex theories like chaos theory for describing interactions. I actually did an independent study with a professor here at USF where we tried to tie diplomacy on the international scale to mathematics.
Okay.
And maybe describing diplomatic situations using mathematics.
Well, from the University of South Florida, this is Eric Gaines with Campus Life. This show was modeled after the popular public radio show, This American Life. In that show, they choose a theme and bring the audience stories on that theme. In this show, we are going to bring you stories from USF around our theme, labels. We bring you stories about people who have labels, whether they choose them or not. Today's show will be presented in four acts. Act 1, the gangster. Act 2, the scientist. Act 3, the legend. And Act 4, the rock star. The gangster. Now, before we start this story, it is important to note that it takes place in Oldsmar, Florida. When this story took place, there were only 34 assaults for the whole year in Oldsmar. For the same year, Tampa had 2,470. According to citydata.com, Tampa had a crime index of 585.6, while Oldsmar had a crime index of just 339.7. Additionally, The movie theater mentioned in this story has at least 3 cops outside of it at all times. Malcolm Garcia tells the story with the help of his friend Alex, whom you will hear from a little later.
Alright, basically I was a little 8th grader and my 8th grade term was about to end, and so I saw with the upcoming summer an opportunity for violence. I had recently read A Clockwork Orange and the novel The Outsiders, so I figured, let me take the lessons that they were teaching, which were like, violence isn't really the answer, it's just gonna get more people hurt in the end, and then cut it off at violence is the answer, take out the knot, and then just go and run with it. So basically I assembled a small gang, an elite group of, well, there's one Asian girl, and then mostly just geeky, lanky, like, drama group kind of people. Like, these are the people that went on to be in drama with me, like, the next year. So, good fighters, good fighting, just natural fighter stance. They're on stage, they know, like, alright, let me just do some violence. That's where this is appropriate. A person we almost had on our side, a cyborg, if you will. My friend told me he could secure a friend of his who I'd known, though I did not know he had this surgical enhancement of built-in brass knuckles just right under the skin there. I can't think of any surgery that he would have needed.
It's not a thing. There's no surgery.
Some people get breast augmentation, some people get a little tummy tuck, some people get built-in brass knuckles in the 8th grade, mind
his
you.
His parents paid for this.
They figured maybe it'd help him later on in life.
It didn't
help us, because he didn't show up. I don't know.
Him and his built-in knuckles and playing video games.
I guess he's playing some video games or just punching lockers with his brass knuckles, just getting some dents in there and practice. He wasn't there. Basically, I decided to set our stage as Woodlands 20, the infamous stomping grounds of little moviegoers everywhere from grades 7 to 12, and I figured that would be a gritty enough locale. Naturally, I assumed that this would happen in my mental vision of this. We would be in some sort of alley. And we'd both be, so now without any coordinated effort, we'd both time it so that we're both walking up to each other in one perfect line from opposing sides, maybe a little like fog coming in, some ambient music, getting ready to get you pumped for your fight. That's not what happened so much as, my gang got there before me, the Jokers, that is, and, Let's take this back. Let you know who we're fighting. We decided to take on the Clear Harbor Boys and Fender's crew, as I loosely dubbed them in an inflammatory bulletin for MySpace, in which I said, I believe, quote, "All right, all you fags in Clear Harbor and Fender's gang, it's time for a rumble." That was the header, so you had to click that. And I guess they did. And Clear Harbor showed Fender's gang, Fender's crew. I don't know where they went. They were never there at any point. And so it was just the Jokers pitted against Clear Harbor. Now this is set up to be the battle of the century. I mean, look at these fighting forces we got. We got the Clear Harbor, aka Clearwater/Safety Harbor skaters, and then we have the Jokers, as we've already established, natural born fighters. And we decided we're going to meet right in the front of the Woodlands. And so I get there a little late. My grandma was late picking me up. So, I mean, I figure most people get dropped off to their fights by, like, grandmothers, like, great aunts even. Just like to touch back on the fact that I'd read A Clockwork Orange. And so my attire of the night was... first of all, I made a custom shirt for the Jokers. I didn't mention this before. It's just a like silhouette of a guy like throwing a punch in a boxing thing, and he has boxing gloves on. He's gray, and his gloves are red. The tops, it says The Joker's across the top in fancy print, and then on the back it says The Clown, because my alias was Chuckles the Clown, so... Yeah, that's just... We're not even going to touch onto that part. so I'm in that, as well as my eyelashes, my fake eyelashes on one eye for Clockwork Orange, but...
Were you wearing the overalls as well?
Thankfully, I was not wearing the overalls. I don't know why they laughed at my appearance when they first saw me. I mean, if anything, little rude. I mean, I see we're fighting, but don't gotta laugh at me. I thought I looked good. But so yeah, I showed up in style and fashionably late, of course, to find out from my gang that apparently we'd already won. The Clear Harbor gang had forfeited once they found out that we had backup with the 580 boys, who I wonder if they ever grew up, became 580 men, or just kind of quit. They were like a high school gang, so we figured we're set. We got older guys on our crew, just in case. And so they gave up. So I get there, and I'm thinking, all right, well, I was ready to fight. Let's go find them. Let's see if this is still on. See them in front of a KFC / Taco Bell, and 580 boys had already left, so it was just us. And I said, "Let's go see what's up, guys." And much to my gang's dismay, I mean, most of them did not. I'm gonna go ahead and say all of them did not want to go. I had one brave little toaster volunteer, and back comes home the next night or the next morning and tells his mom what happened to give him these double black eyes that he has entered his house with. And he explains that he was accidentally elbowed twice. Ba-boom! Right in both eyes. And I don't know if she actually bought that or not. I didn't hear of him getting in trouble, so I imagine she did. So good mother. That's a good likely scenario to happen. Just two boys were wrestling around, two bows falling in two eyes. So let's bring it back. Eric is walking up to them as I'm about 2 or 3 feet behind him, and Eric's just like, "Hey guys, what's up?" And before I could fully register what was happening, a big black guy had come up and punched Eric right in the eyes. I assume it was with both hands to cause the double black eye, though. So as you might imagine, it's a pretty confident fighter, just walking in there, just charging up his fist and then ringing him two good ones. And so that's what he got. And in the middle of my sentence of, "Oh, what the heck," I start getting punched by three black guys who have now encircled me and are just punching at whichever direction they can. I have like one in front mostly, and then one who's focusing just on my right side. Guess he figured I was right-handed. Let's take out the strong hand. Can't fight a guy with the left hand. Maybe that was his thought process. Then there's one guy just repeatedly punched me in the back of the head. Like, I don't know if, like, this was like attack plan Delta A or what, where they just formed this sort of triangle around me. One of them just digging away at the back of my skull, and the other one in front of me. Speaking of the one in front of me, the only quote-unquote hit that I got in, as from my Joker, my gang member's perspective, was the man in front of me. I had knocked to the ground to the point where he kicked his feet in the air like a cartoon. Only what really happened was there was, for some reason, just like a very small puddle. Right, I remember noticing the puddle and thinking nothing of it at first. Then there's just a small puddle that he had slipped in. And just lost his footing, apparently, in gravity as well as in reality, because nobody just flips up like a cartoon like that.
Can I just say here that at this point your gang is just watching your jokers. Your jokers are just standing off to the side watching and possibly cheering for the other team.
It's possible, both possible and likely, that they're cheering for the other team, because I mean you gotta back the winner here, because you gotta think of their safety. We, the Jokers, number...
They're all going to defect. Yeah. They're all going to join the Clear Heart.
I wouldn't have blamed them right away. the Jokers numbered about 10 to maybe 12. Ah, forgot a key point here. You might be asking yourself, where was our high school gang that was backing us up, supposedly, and that had led us to our original victory that I... just kind of nullified.
Victory by default.
Yeah, we had victory by default. Then I nullified that and just went ahead and brought it back into the game. So where's our gang? They are inside this Taco Bell / KFC, just eating some tacos. Like, literally in the window. Eating tacos. I swear to myself that I don't know if this is true or not, but I'm pretty sure I looked at one point over at them, saw them, acknowledge that I'm there, then go back to eating. I don't know if that's exactly what happened or not, but I do know that they were inside that window display, and they could have seen us if they weren't so enthralled in their tacos that they couldn't just look at this mass of 8th graders just fighting each other, aka two of us getting jumped. So I battle / jumping. So it kind of just, I don't know when they decided to stop. I never like fell down or like got knocked out or anything. I guess they just stopped hitting me and Eric with his double black eyes at that point. So they just kind of separated, and then I went back to my gang and I had a very bloody nose and a couple. Eric's black eyes were getting ready to just, they're just swelling up at this point. And I say, as I look down, bam, and I just stepped in some gum. So they were freaking out, asking if I was all right, trying to get napkins, and I guess really that was their priority there, just get me cleaned up. I don't know really how that's going to help the situation. We got like a gang over here.
Yeah, you're bleeding pretty bad at this point.
Yeah. And so we decided to just go into like a TCBY or whatever ice cream place, and they were not happy. The people who worked there were not very happy with us, or my parents, as I went into their bathroom to clean up, and then you came back out after no one had ice cream, so just kind of taking up room in their shop, intimidating other customers, because they don't want to see bloody middle schoolers with eyelashes on. So eventually we left, and, oh, don't worry, we took some free water and a couple napkins. Then we headed back out, and we saw the Clear Harbor boys yet again. This time they started yelling at us. Very conflicting messages here. One of them was yelling about how, what do you think this is, the outsiders? We're just a group of friends trying to hang out, and you guys are trying to fight us, and I don't know what you guys' problem is or what you're doing here. And then after he finishes his little spiel, which is being yelled like directly at me, I guess appropriately, I did sort of send out the message for the fight.
Which drives this whole situation.
But, so after he finishes, this other guy immediately after just goes, yeah, and Clear Harbor for life, bitch! So, wasn't sure if they meant, like, Clear Harbor, best friends for life, bitch! Or, like, the gang for life, comma, bitch. But, I was left confused, bloodied, and thankfully not black-eyed. So that's my experience as an 8th grader fighting other 8th graders.
Malcolm Garcia. Act 2, The Scientist. Research is a very important part of USF. In 2011 alone, USF issued 89 different U.S. patents. It is this research that draws funding to USF. I sat down with Jacob Cohen, a microbiology major, to talk about his long history with science and the research he has been doing at USF. Here's the interview.
My mom always used to say, like, I knew the DNA base pairs before I was toilet trained. Just always knew it. My favorite, like, catalog to look through, like, I'm sure there were other kids look through, like, toy catalogs and stuff like that.
Yeah, I used to have a Lego catalog.
Alright, mine was the Carolina Biological Supply Company catalog. It's this, like, 1,000-page catalog, and it's just got a ton of, it's where, like, you get any kind of supplies for, like, a lab, or for like, a teaching lab, is Carolina Biological Supply Company. So every week or two or month or whatever, I don't remember, this was a long, long time ago, we'd order some, like, prepared slides off of there. And I really loved, when I was a little kid, we would get out my dad's microscope that he had from college, so it's, like, this really old microscope, and we just look at slides from different tissue samples, different kind of cell lines, and just, it's amazing, like, it's always amazing to me that there's this entire world that you would never know is there otherwise. And it's just, and the degree of complexity is absurd compared to, I mean, like, you can basically you can say like, oh yeah, your lung lets you breathe, but you don't know how, and the way the cells interact with each other is ridiculous.
Like these are the slides that they give you, like the pre-prepared slides in, like, high school and college.
We get a lot of stuff from that catalog. We got planaria one time. Those were cute. The little flatworms.
Did you say they were cute?
Yeah, they're real cute. I'm serious. Look at them. They're adorable. I think we got quail eggs from there. That was cool. We hatched some quail. We got a praying mantis egg case. That was crazy. Because, like, 1 minute... We put it in, like, an aquarium thing, and it was there for, I don't remember, like, 5 days or something. Like, just one day you looked, like, there's nothing there, and, like, 20 minutes later I looked again, there's just hundreds of baby mantises just streaming out of this egg case. So when I was a little kid, 1 year for Halloween, I went as an animal cell. Like, I had a cross-section, and I had all the organelles. It was made out of styrofoam. It was, like, painted styrofoam, and they were painted... So, like, I had the mitochondria. It was, like, this football-shaped piece of styrofoam painted red.
Where was your head? Was it the nucleus? Was your head?
No, my head was, like, popping out of the top. Oh. It was my idea. And my mom's friend was visiting from Buffalo, so she helped us make it.
I asked Jake how he got partnered with Dr. Mylene Dow.
Both my parents are dentists. So one of my mom's patients came in and she was talking to my mom. And actually, hold on, let me go back. A couple weeks ago, I had been trying to get into undergraduate research, but I kind of couldn't, like, the website was a little confusing, and they've since redone it. And it said, fill out this form, check the people he wanted to do research with, and also look at the other researchers, and if you see anybody whose research interests you, write their name down. So I went through, I clicked a couple of people, and there's one researcher who is Dr. Dow, and her research was oral streptococci, like how they form biofilms, like how they attach to your teeth and all kinds of stuff.
So I wrote her name down. A couple weeks later, I filled out the application, but it never went through. I don't know if I screwed it up or I didn't go through the right channels to do it. So a couple weeks later, my mom calls me and she says, "Hey, my patient's here, and we're talking about you." And she said that she has a friend at USF, and would I like to do research? I said, "Yeah." And she goes, "Have you ever heard of Melian Dow?" I said, "Actually, she's the only person whose name I wrote down for who I want to do research with, other than people who were available." She's like, "Oh." So basically, I set up a meeting with Dr. Dow and went in and talked to her and got to work in her lab. I worked for her grad student for a semester at Her Williams, basically doing like extracting DNA and running PCRs, which is not that difficult. And then this semester I started working on my thesis, where I've got to basically examine all these other streptococci for collagenases on their membranes, or membrane cell-associated collagenases. And it's been great. It's been awesome. Dr. Dow's been awesome. She's helped me a lot with a lot of different procedures, with applying for all of these things where I get to present my research and it'll look great on a resume or CV or whatever. I got accepted to the National Conference of Undergraduate Research. Which is in March. That's in Utah. And actually, the school is paying for that, which is pretty sweet. We sent in my abstract for the American Society for Microbiology general meeting in San Francisco in June. I think it's gonna be end of June, and we'll find out in April if we got into that. We're also working on a paper with me as first author, which is like unheard of for undergraduate research, and it's also unheard of for an undergraduate researcher in biology to publish, because it takes us a long time to do any kind of research and get publishable material. Things don't really always go as you expect, but I've been really, really lucky with my research, and things have worked out really well. And Dr. Dow even says, like, I must have... last night, my procedure, I had to do, like, this three-hour thing where you just wash it with a bunch of different stuff to try and see if our enzyme was there. Like, you wash it with a bunch of different buffers, and you wash it with antibody, and then you wash the antibodies off, you wash it with another antibody, and then you wash it with a dye that reacts to the secondary, with an enzyme coupled to the secondary antibody, to see if my enzyme was there. And she it just worked. And she says, everything always works for me. She always says that. She always says, everything works the way I want it to. And she's like, you must have done something good in a past life. Because it tends to work out that way for whatever reason. My grandma passed away in December, but I'm really glad that before she did, around Thanksgiving, my aunt and my cousin came to visit, and while they were here, they got to come in and see the lab that I work at. And we brought, even though my grandmother, like, she had dementia, she could barely talk, she couldn't walk around, she was in a wheelchair, but they still brought her to the lab, and she got to see where I work. So I'm really glad she got to see that before she died, because it's always what I wanted to do, so I'm glad that she got to see that.
Jacob Cohen. His research will also be presented for his thesis for the Honors College here at USF. The legend. Most of us have heard stories of a person that seems like some kind of legend. These stories tend to be very grandiose in nature, but we have no evidence to refute them. Well, Alex Fiju tells us the story of just this sort of person. Here's Alex.
All right, so, in middle school, back, way back. I had the pleasure of knowing a man named Marty. He also changed his name several times to just, like, Final Fantasy characters. He said he legally changed his name to Vincent Valentine for a while, so... He said, and I quote, "My mom destroyed all of my documentation, so I get to change my name to whatever I want.
That's
so start
works.
Calling me Vincent Valentine." So that's just right off the bat. Anyway, so he was a very colorful character. He would wear just a trench coat, like a body-length trench coat and underwear, and that was it. And, like, but, like, he'd wear it open. Like, he wouldn't, and so you're just looking at this man's boxers, and he's just walking, and in full clown makeup, not just, like, fake eyelashes. We're talking white paint all over his face with, like, black tears coming down his face, like, to school, with a full-length trench coat. And he's just an incredibly dramatic guy. He used to tell me these stories specifically about his dad. For example, in Marty's house, at any point, if he asked his dad a question, any question, for like the one he told me was, "Hey, Dad, what's for dinner?" If he would ask his dad that, his dad would pick him up under the arms and throw him flat against the ceiling so his whole back would slam up against the top of the ceiling. So, yeah, that's... And every day on his way to school, while he's driving into school, so while we're, like, asleep in car line, the rest of us middle schoolers getting driven by our parents, Marty is having the ride of a lifetime because he says on his way to school, every day, his dad would get the car up to, like, 60 miles an hour and then jump out, leaving Marty to wrestle this car to a stop. And
I like to imagine the first time that he did it.
Yeah.
Save the car the first time, and then the dad was just like, "Good job, son."
Or, "I'm gonna have to try this again tomorrow." twist, turns out, which I find out later, Marty didn't even know his dad. His dad, he never met his dad. It was his mom he lived with. And where was his mom in these stories he would tell me? Well, okay, think Moody's Point, because, like, Marty told me a story that his mom was... It was either she was out searching for aliens in the Bermuda Triangle, or the aliens were searching for her and chased her to the Bermuda Triangle. Either way,
finally
she was
down
in the Bermuda Triangle, in a hot air balloon, abducted by aliens. So Marty, this man, constantly battling his father and, let's face it, the whole world, Marty versus the world, he used to go to the mall with a katana, like a sword, unsheathed, just strung on his back with like a string, just walking around the mall with a sword on his back. And this is still in trench coat, clown makeup, like he would sometimes wear just like a skateboard helmet as well, like with all this. And so... He's at the mall with this katana, and I see him. I'm like, "Marty, you have a sword on your back. You can't just have a sword on your back." And he's like, "I brought it to show the people at the Asian store." And he always talks like this. Like, he's always talking like he's like Chris Bale. Oh, what's his name?
Christian Bale
in freaking Batman or whatever. He's like, "I brought my sword so I could show the people at the Asian store what a real blade is." And then he would like whip his sword out and just do like flourishes, like at the mall. A crazy guy. I don't know, he never got in trouble for this, but he used to just go to these places all the time. Like, me and my group would be at the movies, and then we'd just see Marty, and it was just like, you just see, like, this lone figure approaching out of the darkness. He always seemed to be approaching out of the darkness, and he would walk up and just be like, "Hey, can I hang out with you guys?" And we're always like, "Yeah, Marty, sure." And then, so this one time we're at the mall, we're all just walking along, and... these bike cops, and he's riding his bike, and he's about to leave, and these bike cops come up to him, and they're like, "Hey, you can't ride your bike home, you've got no light on it, you've got to walk it home." So Marty, like the, you know, normal, instead of just pushing his bike until he's out of their range and then riding it, what he does is goes, "Does anybody smell bacon?" Not even, completely disregards the two cops, goes, "Does anybody smell bacon?" And then he goes, "Oink, oink," gets on his bike, pedals off, and the last thing I see of him is him peeling around the corner out of the plaza with two bike cops in hot pursuit. You might be asking,
what?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know the end of that story. Because, like, Marty would, like, pop into my life and then disappear for long periods of time. Like, he would pop into my life, and then I'd see him get chased away by two bike cops, and then I wouldn't see him for another couple years. But... Oh, okay. I haven't even gotten into the whole vampire aspect. Now that you're okay, so Marty would... Okay, there are these two other girls that are linked to Marty through this vampire thing, because Marty believes he is a vampire. And I'm going to say that again, because Marty believes he is a vampire. Like,
Marty is a vampire.
He is a vampire. He like, if you mention a dog near him, or, like, a wolf... like, even just, like, a dog walk... Oh, damn mutts! I hate those werewolf-liking scum! Like, very serious, very serious about this. And there were these two girls at my school who one day I was just talking to them, and then they tell me, they're like, Alex, you can't tell anybody, okay? Like, this is, and I'm like, oh, this is what, I don't even, and they're like, we're vampires. I'm like, oh, okay, you're vampires. And they're like, no, really, we feed on each other. Watch. and she takes out, like, a Swiss Army knife just from her pocket that she just had, and she doesn't even use the blade part. She takes out the corkscrew part. So it's just got, like, that and she just drags it down across your palm really quick, and there's, like, just, like, this little line of blood, and then she just feeds it to the other girl, and then they just keep telling, and they're like, we got made into vampires by the vampire king, Marty, and I was like, Marty, no, it's Marty, and apparently Marty just has, like, ritualistic sex with these girls, and they just feed each other blood and become vampires, and, that's Marty's whole, that's Marty's scene. Oh yeah, okay, so he really was, like, and he's telling me all these stories about himself, about his dad, just about his life, all while in our home economics class, and we had a very, attractive home economics teacher who everybody had a crush on, but Marty really took the cake in this as well. He one day, when she broke up with her husband at one point, our teacher, and so Marty thinks to console her by unsolicited just brings in a bunny rabbit, and just gives it to her. Like,
alive,
nobody...
A live
rabbit. Yeah, nobody... And he didn't have a cage. He just brought it in. Nobody...
Here.
I'd like to just say that nobody had ever mentioned a rabbit. Like, she never said, like,
rabbits,
I love bunny
rabbits.
No, it's not... He was just like, I got you this rabbit. And she turned out to be allergic to it, and she... and she said she, and I quote, experienced one of the worst nights of her life with her allergies and had to give it to a different teacher. So that was awesome. Samurai ninja. And so he decided to dye his hair blood red like Gaara's, but in order to dye any black hair like a bright color, you need to dye it white first, bleach it white. So he bleached it white, but then he didn't have enough money, he said, for the dye. So for like 6 months, he just wore bleached hair that over time his roots were bleeding back into it. So like, after, like, 6 months, it was just, like, this nasty, yellowing, brown, white, black, like... It just looked like there was, like, egg salad on his head, like, all the time. Like, egg salad with, like, brown hair showing through it. So, and then, to just further compound this Gaara complex, at the 8th grade graduation, the vice principal calls his name. She says, Martin... They call him up, and he gets, like, halfway across the stage, turns back, walks back over to the vice principal and says, my name's Gaara. And she says, what? And the whole school can hear, I'm Gaara. What? And then he goes, my name is Gaara. And she goes, Gaara! Announces him as Gaara, and he just smugly smiles and walks off the stage. So that's Marty, the illustrious man of mystery.
Alex Bijou. We'll be right back. Act 4, The Rockstar. Well, my friends, we close our show today with another interview. As of fall 2011 at the USF Tampa campus, there are 1,242 students who are listed as undeclared majors. That's 4% of the student body. Like a lot of people entering college, Neil Pepe went through many different major choices before settling on his major. I spoke with Neil about his process of choosing a major, his aspirations, and his interests. Here's the story.
Well, since about 8th grade, I wanted to be a musician. I started with guitar, I think, in around 8th grade, and then I started playing drums. And I knew I wanted to write music and play concerts, which is pretty common for an 8th grader, but it wasn't for popularity, or it wasn't for, you know, a girlfriend or anything. I just loved hearing elements of music come together in that way. It was a form of expression that was completely new to me. Just being creative, I guess. Just there's so many different ways you could bring out emotions, and they're really powerful emotions, sometimes without saying anything at all. I think that's what attracted me to it first.
So what's your earliest memory with wanting to actually to perform music?
Well, I first got my guitar, and I think I learned, it was some Beatles song. I don't remember. My earliest memories are always the Beatles, and it was just being in my room, not being able to play really at all, but sort of like rocking out as best I could. Further through high school, I started to mess with music a little bit more, and music recording, actually. So I had my own little laptop with recording software and maybe like a couple microphones. And so when I was getting closer to the end of high school, I was pretty dead set on doing that, doing music recording and having a studio of my own one day. I was also very fond of writing, and to study music at a public college, where I would be able to get bright futures and things like that, music recording wasn't really an option. It was usually at like technical schools.
Yeah, private colleges like Full Sail.
Yeah, which are very expensive. So what I was going to major in was music composition, and I was going to do like a minor in electronic music composition. But at the same time, my parents said it wasn't practical. They couldn't imagine me getting a job in that, or at least it would be difficult to do that. The degree is only going to teach you things, and you need to be good. The degree itself, having a degree isn't going to get you a job.
Yeah, like you can know everything there is to know about writing music and playing music, but if you don't have talent, you can't really do it.
Exactly. It all boils down to that. And so, in a sense, you know, they were right. It wasn't that practical, and, you know, they weren't willing to spend money on something that wasn't sure that it was going to make me money. So from there, I was thinking, you know, what else creative was I interested in? And I didn't have any experience at all, but I was kind of interested in photography. It's interesting to see the way pictures are framed, you know, who's the subject and where they're located in the frame. And when I thought of it, soon after that, I brought it up, and I got basically the same reaction, which is, it's not practical. Which photojournalism could have actually been practical, but I just, I wasn't even as invested in that as I was in music. So photography, right. I just dropped that idea altogether.
In case you were wondering, I did ask Neil what his major was.
I'm currently majoring in accounting, and I'm going to graduate this May.
Okay, and do you like it?
I like business. I do not like accounting. And even some things of accounting I'm not bad at, but I don't imagine myself ever being an accountant. I don't think I would enjoy doing that as a career. When I graduate, I'm not looking for a job in accounting. So, no, I don't really enjoy it much.
If you don't like accounting, what do you like about business?
What I like about business is I enjoy entrepreneurship. I enjoy marketing, media. I might actually be looking into being like a media analyst or a marketing analyst. To where I can use my analytical side, which is what made me somewhat good at accounting, but at the same time, coming up with creative solutions. So it's sort of, I do have an analytical side and applying that to my creativity. One of my sort of end career goals is I would like to get into film, and that's completely out there. That's completely different. So I might end up going back to school for film and going that route. In the meantime, different elements of business, basically anywhere in business where I can come up with ideas, I can use my creative side and I can express those ideas. When I play, I don't play nearly as much as I write. So I'd say when I play, it's all about, like, I don't know, I'm just a nervous stage performer. So it's all about, oh my God, did I just screw that up? Or I don't know, is this the right volume? Can everyone hear what I'm doing? Stuff like that. When I write, I don't know. I guess it just sort of goes with the flow of things. You start with something that comes from who knows where, and then it just sort of becomes its own thing. You know, it creates from there. Yeah, I mean, like, I feel the same about writing as well. You know,
sorry, you're talking about screenwriting?
And, yeah, screenwriting. To where I've tried doing outlines, and they can be helpful, and trying to think out, you know, where is this going to end if you're doing, like, something big, but when it comes down to it, usually you get inspired from anywhere, from anything at all, and then it just sort of flows naturally. You learn more about it as you go along, and it becomes its own thing.
Do we have a treat for you? Here's a sneak peek at what Neil's screenplay is going to be about.
On a basic level, it's a therapist and a man who is told by the company he works for that he has to take therapy. And so the therapist is sort of like a realist, like a, you know, pragmatic mindset, and the guy that's working for the company actually is the opposite. He's romantic, he's kind of out of place in this company, and so throughout their journey they sort of break each other out of their own mindset.
Neil Pepe. Be on the lookout for Neil's screenplay. I'd be absolutely amazed if it does not get made into a movie. Today's show was produced, written, gathered, and edited by me, Eric Gaines. I also provided all of the music you heard in today's broadcast. Special thank you to Zach Forrest, Malcolm Garcia, Jacob Cohen, Alex Fiju, and Neil Pepe for their contributions to the show. If you'd like to learn more about Campus Life, send me an email at usfcampuslife@gmail.com. That address again, usfcampuslife@gmail.com. Thank you.